It's the Larry Kudlow Show. Free market prosperity starts here. Now, here's Larry Kudlow.
All right. I'm Larry Kudlow. Welcome back to the Larry Kudlow Show. First of all, you can join us during the week. Fox Business Network. The name of the show is Kudlow, 4 to 5 p.m., Monday through Friday, every day. And if you can't make it at 4, just text your favorite 9-year-old, who will teach you how to DVR the show. Point number one. Point number two, you can live stream us, LarryKudlowShow.com, live stream us on the internet, LarryKudlowShow.com. Goes all across the country, around the world, throughout the solar system. By the way, our ratings on the solar system are really moving up nicely. And now we're going to do some stock market work. And we bring in my dear friend, Michelle Girard, head of U.S. NatWest Markets, and Mike Ozanian, assistant managing editor for Forbes Media and co-host of the great show, Forbes' Sports Money, plays on the YES Network. I've been watching that show. It's a good show. Now, Michelle Girard, love. I'm going to apologize because you know what's coming. I have to spend a moment with my friend Mike Ozanian on the collapse of the New York Yankees. Okay, I watch it every night. I watch really large chunks of the game. My heart is broken. I don't even know if they're going to make the playoffs. Anyway, Mike Ozanian, give us a minute on the Yankees, please.
Well, right now, as you look at the team, Larry, as I know you have been, basically their offense is all about one guy.
Yep.
That guy is named Aaron Judge.
Yep.
And who now, is, of course, is even being pitched around, you know, walks 2-3 times every game because nobody gets on base in front of him. Nobody is a threat to hit behind him. Look, all teams have injuries, right? The Rays, who have caught up to the Yankees, almost have had a ton of injuries. I hate to say this, and I think I'm dead wrong. I think when we had a chat a couple of months ago when the Yankees were, you know, 15 games in first place, I was taking the view that, you know, when these other guys even start hitting better, guys like LeMahieu and so forth, you know, they're going to do even better. What actually has happened, I think, is we've seen the weakness in how the Yankees have been constructed, whereby there are too many guys that strike out too often.
That's it.
Don't get on base enough.
That's it.
And that's really what it's come down to.
There's no contact hitters. LeMahieu is hurt. LeMahieu is hurt. But they're all hitting 200.
Hicks, Donaldson, both of their catchers. And I think they have a big problem going forward, too, because if Stanton is now at the point where he's only going to play 50 games a year, that's $35 million a year in salary, you know, that really works out to $70 million a year in salary. Looming on all of this is Mr. Judge. What does he do at the end of the season? He's a free agent. He's turned down the Yankees' first offer. He bet on himself, as they say, before the season by not signing. And he's having an MVP year, most valuable player year. He has an outside shot to win the Triple Crown.
Yes, he does. That's a key point. He's hitting .304 with 55 homers and whatever, 120 RBIs. He's amazing. But the rest of them are all hitting 200. They can't hit. They can't make contact. It's dry. Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
I love the feeling. And I know, Michelle, you and I, we all love analytics. And all baseball teams use it. But I think whatever analytics the Yankees are employing that was telling them, you know, Donaldson was a good offensive player
and all these
other guys.
He's terrible.
I think they need to revisit that because whatever they're putting in that formula isn't working.
You know, just last point. On-base percentage is very important. The batting average and the walks. And they just don't have it. They don't get on base. They strand runners. But the amazing thing is Aaron Judge is hitting over 300. You're right. He could win the Triple Crown. All right. Enough of that. Michelle Girard, best Wall Street economist and a very old and dear friend. Michelle, let's talk about the Fed just for a sec. Unconfirmed chairman of the Fed, Nick Timiraos, who's a Wall Street Journal writer, who's a friend of mine. He has told us the Fed's going to raise the target by 75 basis points. When's the meeting? Next week, is it? Or the week
21st.
After?
21st. Yeah, the 21st. All right. The week after.
And I'm sure they will. Beyond that, we will see. But I wanted to know if you agree with that. And I want to know what your outlook is. I mean, you know, inflation, you're probably going to get a negative print because of gasoline prices for the August number.
Yep.
Right, for the August number. But it's all gasoline prices. Food prices are soaring. All these, you know, the Cleveland Fed median is 6.5% growth and the trimmed mean is 7% growth. So I don't think inflation's going to disappear. Maybe you disagree, mm-hmm. and if you do, please tell us. But I'm just saying, what's your outlook for the Fed right now?
Yeah, well, we had 50 basis points in a kind of a close call. We've never been that, you know, we've always acknowledged it 50 or 75, and it certainly the rhetoric and then Nick's article would tip the scales, it seems like 75. And then they'll keep going. I think at the moment, we, along with the markets, have a 4% terminal rate, if you will, at least, you know, that's what they think the stopping point is. I think it remains to be seen whether that is the stopping point. It may be where they pause and reassess, but I agree with you that inflation is going to be more persistent. Now, Larry, you've actually had this call. You've been saying it's going to be 6%. The core rate's going to be 6% at the end of the year.
Yeah.
And, you know, we were at 4, then we were at 4.5. Now we're like close to 5.5. So I'm catching up to you, Larry. And, you know, it will come down, and things like energy will help the headline. But, you know, again, away from energy, there's really no sign of a material deceleration. I think any slowing is going to be slower than the Fed would like. We don't have the inflation rate getting back to a 2% target until 2024. San Francisco Fed put out a paper. They don't have the inflation rate hitting target till 2025. Mm-hmm. So it's going to be slow. And I think for the markets, the important thing here is, you know, the market is still looking for rate cuts next year, even though the Fed is signaling or trying to say, you know, that isn't likely to happen. Rates are likely to stay higher for longer. The markets are still operating under this assumption that if the economy goes into recession, which we actually are forecasting, the Fed will be forced to reverse course. And I think the markets are missing that. You know, this is a very different time. It's almost like a regime change, if you will, or it's a return to what, you know, I mean, the Fed is trying to learn and from the lessons of the past, not make the same mistakes. And I don't think they're going to be thinking about cutting interest rates until that, you know, inflation rate is much, much closer to target.
Yeah, I think you're totally right. I think inflation is going to be stickier, longer. They are a long ways from 2%. I don't care what gasoline price. I mean, I'm glad gasoline prices are coming down for the sake of the American worker and typical family, but it's going to be a slog. You know, Michelle, they'll take – the way I was reading Jay Powell's speech, and, you know, I listened to Jim Bullard, who I think is the smartest guy, plus his former research assistant Chris Waller, who with Donald Trump's backing I put him on the Fed. Mm-hmm. You know, those guys are trying to tell you, they'll take the unemployment rate all the way through 6%, Michelle.
Right.
I mean, that's the deal. That's the deal. And
it's
the market people in the stock market who think they're going to A, pause later this year, or B, cut rates next year are out of their minds.
Yeah,
they're not going to do it.
No, I think that they want to front load the rate hike.
Yes,
and then I think, you know, again, they may pause. The other thing too that we have to is quantitative tightening. I mean, they're going to actually start to, you know, to sell. We think they will start to sell securities. So
right.
You're going to have a double whammy. And then the other thing is, I mean, at best, I think they pause. But as we talked about, if inflation proves more persistent through 2023 than everybody sort of expects,
they can't
maybe
pause.
4% isn't even the peak.
No,
so
no,
I think the market's going to be very challenged.
The funds rate, look, first of all, you make a great point. They're finally going to start trimming their balance sheet. Look, the 10-year's gone up almost 100 basis points from the low. It's 3.32 is what I have for Friday, but whatever. We haven't seen the peak in market rates, and we sure haven't seen the peak in the Fed funds rate. Come on. They can't do that. I mean, they could slow them from 75s to – you know what? Let's go back to last spring. I stick with what I said. They should have raised the funds rate a full point every single meeting until you actually see the inflation index is coming down rapidly. That's what they should have done, because Bullard made a point last week. He said, let's not drag this out, right?
Right.
The sooner they get back to, you know, price stability, quote unquote, then the faster the economy can recover. The cavalry's coming. The Democrats are going to lose both houses. The Republicans are going to, you know, stop spending, and they're going to start cutting taxes, or trying to, or they won't raise them. And that'll help. And they're getting rid of these regulatory shackles around the economy. But, I mean, the Fed's got work to do. The only other thing I want to ask you is, Michelle, don't you think Nick Timiraos should be confirmed as the Fed chairman? he's the only straight shooter.
It's almost like a mini FOMC meeting. Like, as soon as that article hit, it was like the markets, it was almost as if the Fed had acted. So it's quite funny.
You know, I know him very, very well. He covered me when I was in the White House. He's a very smart guy. He's a very smart guy, and look, they're leaking to him, and he puts it right out. We all know that game. Anyway, let's take a quick break. I want to get Ozanian back in here. We got to figure out what the investment strategy is and what the GDP is going to look like. So we're talking to Michelle Girard, who's with NatWest, and Mike Ozanian, Forbes Media and Sports Money. I'm Kudlow. We'll be right back.
This is the Larry Kudlow Show. Now, back to the Larry Kudlow Show.
Welcome back, folks. We're talking stocks and the economy. We got Michelle Girard from NatWest Markets and Mike Ozanian from Forbes Media and Forbes Sports Money on the YES Network. So, Mike Ozanian, I don't know if you agree with what Michelle and I were saying. By the way, Michelle, who was a former economist with the Federal Reserve Board in Washington and once worked on the staff of one Kudlow back at Bear Stearns days, and she is one smart woman. So
I do agree with Michelle, and I have to say I've also been very fortunate to learn a lot from her over the years in listening to her and when she's appeared on your show.
And she speaks clearly. She speaks clearly. Yeah. Have you noticed
that? I understand.
Okay, let's move on to the content that I'm sure everyone would prefer to hear. Mike, what do you think this all means for the market?
That's right. There you go. She's the host now. Go ahead.
For me, I'm going to be very, very selective with equities.
Yeah.
I don't trust the bond market right now. And to your point about Nick writing for the Journal, I think Powell has come out and said he's not going to be talking anymore or something like that the other day. So I think we're going to really need Nick to tell us a lot more going forward.
Yes.
But look, it's going to be a very tough market going ahead. We've seen for the overall economy, the Fed flash estimate for, I guess it was quarter three, just got almost cut in half, I think, from over two to under two. I think rising mortgage rates are going to hurt the consumer. I think real wages are going to have a very, very tough time staying positive. So that's going to, I think, make corporate profits very challenging. And look, FactSet has come out and said the other day they're only looking for 3.7% growth year over year in quarter three. If that's accurate, that's going to be the lowest growth rate since 2000 when it was negative. So I think you got to be very, very picky in the equity market at this time.
Do you buy energy, or what would you buy if you were picking around?
I think one of the overlooked sectors of the American economy are the railroads. They've become incredibly efficient through technology and through how their generators power the trains and everything. And for my money, probably the best run, or one that there isn't another one running any better, is Union Pacific. They continue to have earnings growth. They continue to have revenue growth. And they pay a nice 2.3% dividend. And their PE is, you know, right about at the market at 17. So I really like that. And as an outplayer on all this stuff happening around the globe on inflation, I like the Australian dollar, which I think has fallen a little bit the past 2 weeks. But I think as Australia starts to ratchet up its tightening, for fears of inflation. I think that bodes well. They also sell a lot of commodities. Mm. So I also like the Australian dollar.
U.S. dollar's pretty darn strong.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, the U.S. dollar's strong. And it's made up some, not only against foreign currencies, but it's been strengthening against commodities. So there's that.
We've seen that, As the CPI has sort of leveled off, we've seen that the U.S. dollar get stronger. And for that, I'd kind of stay away from emerging market stocks.
Right, because they'll get clobbered if interest rates keep going up, U.S. rates.
Exactly.
Michelle Girard, to Mike's point, the GDP tracker from the Atlanta Fed's gone from 2.6 to 1.4. Now, they're going to revise it, obviously, when we get the new numbers in from the rest of August. But what are you thinking here about the economy? And we're on the front end of recession or whatever the semantics are, but what's your outlook for the economy, GDP? And just one appendix to that, Mike mentioned mortgage rates. I'm just looking here. 30-year mortgages are back to 6.11.
Right.
Wow.
Right.
Housing's in pretty lousy shape, right? I mean,
Housing was down sharply even in the second quarter, and it's, I mean, double digits, and it will continue to, you know, to be a big drag.
So what's the outlook?
Yeah, as I mentioned, we did actually put in a formal recession into our forecast.
Oh.
And, I think we're right around 1.5 in the third quarter. You know, we had negative, obviously, quarters in the first of the year, but they really weren't reflective of where the economy was. There were some, you know, special factors with inventories and trade, and consumer spending was still positive. If you X out some of those categories, if you look at kind of domestic demand, although we did have some weak investment numbers in the second quarter, but in general, I think that the negative GDP numbers didn't really reflect where the economy was. And even now, I mean, we'll get retail sales this week. I think actually, it's going to show that the consumer is still sort of holding in. Some of the anecdotal reports on back to school shopping have been holding up. I mean, they're not necessarily strong, but they're holding up. And so we have a 1.5% gain in the third quarter, and then it turns negative and fundamentally negative, where you start to see in the fourth quarter, we've got growth down, I think it's 1.5%, but we've got declines kind of across the board, consumer spending, investment, housing. You know, now you're actually seeing the start, I think, of what is really, you know, the recession, and we've got negative growth continuing into the first half of next year. It's not easy. It's going to be difficult and painful, obviously, but this is the economic cost that we need to bear, in order to bring inflation down. I just don't think that the Fed, I think, recognizes this when you talk about their willingness to drive the unemployment rate up. The only way we're going to bring, you know, inflation down is to slow demand. Hopefully, and you mentioned tax cuts. I mean, it would be great to get some fiscal action in the form of tax cuts, not spending, that will help increase the supply side of the economy as well. But, you know, in the interim, what the Fed is, I think, more directly able to control, the name of the game to bring inflation down is to really get, you know, demand down, which is effectively to slow the economy down to a point that I think ends up, you know, leading to recession.
Yeah, you're right. Look, the dopes running Washington right now are not going to give us any supply side help. Michelle, just one kind of a quirky question, but look at California and about 10 other states are banning gas-powered automobiles.
Yeah.
I mean, this is an insanity. But my question to you is, what's that going to do to car sales?
Because
seriously,
the switch isn't there. You know, the problem is at the moment, I think they want to do that by 2030. I mean, at the moment, I think electric vehicles account for something like 8% of the cars on the road. I mean, you just can't, you know, you can't find the supply. And so I think that will be, I mean, on some level, I guess you could argue it might spark demand in some areas at the expense of others. But I think all of these kinds of policies are incredibly problematic. And I think that that's going to be something we end up, you know, that we'll have to see how it plays out. Where I actually thought you were going to is just given the environment that we're in, you know, this whole where ESG comes together with the realities of the current situation kind of with Ukraine. I mean, some of the, you know, the policies that we've, you know, the government wants to put forward is clashing with the realities of the current situation as well. And so I think, you know, I think with all of these perhaps well-intentioned ideas, the realities of the constraints and the implications of what that actually means in the transition period is quite tricky.
It's not tricky. It's catastrophic. There's nothing tricky about it. It's catastrophic. You know, Mike O'Zane, I got 30 seconds. We're all going to buy EVs, but Gavin Newsom won't let you plug in the battery. You can't recharge it because there's no electricity in California. I got to get out of here.
They don't have the grid. Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's
the
all
grids.
About control, Larry.
Yeah, control. Mike O'Zanian and Michelle Girard. Terrific stuff. All right, folks, stick around. We've got Money in Politics coming up with Liz Peek and John Fund. I'm Kudlow. Please stay with us.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.